Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time. I don't want to waste any time because I have heard so much chatter today in regard to our special guest tonight, and it was hard to get her back because she's so darn busy, but I want to bring on Dr. Amy Salerno, and we're going to just jump right into this thing. Doc, how are you? It is so good to see you.
I am well, thank you.
You have been really busy. I know that you were just so immersed in the COVID pandemic and taking care of folks. I mean, how was that experience for you to go through that and hopefully now start to see the change that's coming?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to wish you a happy Father's Day. And I don't know. Yes. And I don't know if Skylar and Tyler are dads, but if they are indeed, I want to wish them a happy Father's Day.
Oh, that is so kind. Yeah, that was a great day yesterday. We just had a nice relaxing day and kicked around. And you know, I actually thought about my own father, who I never knew, Amy. He left when I was young, and most of my life I had really no feelings for him one way or another, other than I'd always heard that he was kind of a bum and didn't do a good job as a dad. And I think that was true. He didn't do a good job as a dad. But I found out after he died at age 92 last year that things that I thought were lies most of his life were actually true, that he was in one of the fiercest battles in the Pacific in World War II, was shot 7 times, received the Purple Heart and 2 Silver Stars. And, you know, this thing that happens through our belief system, our faith, happened for me finally. I finally came to this kind of realization that, yeah, he still was a crummy dad, but maybe there was some baggage with all of those things that happened over the course of his life that added to that. But anyway, it actually is kind of an interesting segue into this discussion on the Daybells today because, you know, children still love their parents as screwed up as some parents are. But there's a big difference between a parent who understood that there was another meaning for the word rod and used it to spare the child or to keep the child from being spared, and someone who goes out and commits homicide. We're going to be talking about that tonight with the Daybell case. But before we jump into that, you know, thankfully to folks like you, I have my prescription, my diet Dr. Pepper, and we have started getting folks sponsoring the Diet Dr. Peppers for me. So I want to thank Moonlight View for taking care of the Diet Dr. Peppers for this week and taking care of the back office while we have some fun. And I just tell you, Moonlight View, thanks. It really is helpful. But Amy, I mean, this thing continues to unfold, and it seems like every week I'm doing a video on some new challenge that's happening in the court, some real twist and turn. And I think back a year ago when we were talking about Joseph Ryan and Alex Cox and Charles Vallow, the children hadn't been discovered yet, but we were painting a picture of what I consider to be serial murder, this repetitive kind of repeated behavior that seems to be going on. I don't know if that's what will truly unfold, but they seem to always be connected to Lori in one way or another. As you've watched this thing unfold, I mean, what have you thought as the year went on?
Well, I really thought and think what my first blush opinion was when I saw Lori on national television, that there is something, talk about deeply flawed, we're going to say like a defecto fatal, a fatal flaw. No pun intended. But I truly believe that, of course, I haven't done a psychiatric evaluation on her, but I truly believe that she is a psychopath. And I do believe if the evidence is shown and we can glean, or the investigators can glean more evidence from the likes of Joseph Ryan, who was found majorly, as we know, in decomposition, post-mortem on his bed. If they are diligent to leave no stone unturned, I truly believe she's a serial murderer, a serial killer, I guess you would call it. And she left people in her wake, just hither, thither, and yon.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think about, and you mentioned the psychopathy. You look at the history, there are legal court documents that suggest by family members that her father had schizophrenia. There are legal documents that sister Stacy Culp, who died primarily because she allowed herself to starve to death, and she was
diabetes.
Yeah, but there were times when she was saying, "I'm a boy, and you'll refer to me by this boy's name," and that there was suggestion that there was schizophrenia there. I've said that when I look at Lori and these discussions about zombies. I remember working in the psych unit as a college student, and it very much fits some of these same kinds of things. Now, there's a lot of argument back and forth, and this is throwing you a little bit under the bus because it's not your specialty in medicine, but what's your personal feeling on schizophrenia being hereditary in some cases?
Okay. So first of all, I did the equivalent of a four-year residency in psychiatry. And for 14 years, I don't know if you've read my my resume, but I was an attending in the psych unit, and I admitted acutely psychotic and suicidal, and dealt with overdoses in the ICU. And this is prior to my current position in Western Jersey as working with a migrant community. So I always have done family medicine, which is, you know, the cradle to the grave, the womb to the tomb, we say. That's one residency, and I'm board certified in that. But I also did a second. I never sat for the boards, but I have the equivalent of 4 years of training in that.
I have no idea. So what do you think?
All right. Well, first of all, I think we all, myself included, need to be very careful about throwing out diagnoses on folks that, number one, we've never met. Number two, we've never formally evaluated. And number three, if a person is not a medical person, throwing out a diagnosis like schizophrenia, et cetera, is particularly dangerous. And I have seen, not on per se your site, but on other true crime sites, where people are like, yeah, she's definitely schizophrenic, or this person's definitely this. And I want to speak to the diagnosis of schizophrenia, if I might.
Please do. Yeah, this is great.
So first of all, in the old training, there was Axis 1 diagnoses in psychiatry, Axis 2 and Axis 3 diagnoses. Axis 1 diagnoses, it's set up, the paradigm is set up a little bit differently recently, but I go back to the old way. Axis 1 diagnoses are psychiatric disorders, basically, that can be helped with medication. So you're looking at obsessive compulsive disorder, bipolar disorder, major depression, schizophrenia, and something, there are many, but the other one is also called schizoaffective disorder. Okay. And so that's Axis 1, and we can medicate patients fairly well. And if patients are on their medications, they do quite well in this day and age. Even schizophrenics, for the most part, can live a productive life and can be in a relationship that is long lasting with a spouse, whatever. Although schizophrenia, it is much more difficult for somebody to, even on a daily basis, interact in a healthy relationship. They tend to want to be apart. Now, schizoaffective disorder, affective meaning mood, is what I call, for the layperson, a combination of schizophrenia and bipolar. Mm. So the person has elements or traits of schizophrenia, but they don't have a full-blown diagnosis of that. And they have traits of being bipolar, where they're depressed, sometimes hypomanic or manic. What does that mean? Somebody that's schizoaffective, we see, especially with medication and therapy and counseling, I have many patients even now that live normal lives. They have a full-time job. They have children. They parent beautifully. They have a spouse. So it does not preclude a person from living a full life. Now, Axis II diagnoses are personality disorders like psychopathy, sociopathy, antisocial personality disorder, amongst others. And then the Axis III have to do with really more medical diagnoses that may or may not play into a person's mood and psychiatric things, like maybe hypothyroidism. So I know this is a long shaggy dog explanation, but let's go back to your initial question, which is, where does schizophrenia fit in for Lori Vallow, Alex, et cetera, and the sister and the father? Looking at Lori Vallow, having not examined her professionally and formally, looking at the way she lived and lives her life, whether she's on medicine or not, she does not smack of a schizophrenic. Okay? People who are schizophrenic, even with medication, most often have problems with their executive functioning and their activities of daily living. So activities of daily living are getting up, making your bed, shaving if you're, whatever, showering, brushing your teeth. Those are activities of daily living, right? And your executive functioning are things like, you invited me to come here today to speak to you on choir practice. So then today I had to think, okay, well, I've got to get this done for my job. So I've had my day planned out so that I could arrive in time to say hello to you. And so all of my plans today and the things that I had to do represent executive functioning. And a true schizophrenic has great difficulty in executive functioning. A schizoaffective disorder, you really can do quite well. So now let's look at Lori. She doesn't have the hallmarks of somebody that's schizophrenic. She clearly had no problem with her executive functions in planning her buying a wedding ring, a malachite wedding ring off of Amazon, buying a bathing suit and getting her honeymoon set up. All of that points away from somebody who's schizophrenic. That doesn't mean that you can still have a delusional disorder.
Yeah.
You can still actually be psychotic. And I think she honestly has a delusional disorder. If I were to put something up there on Axis One, she, to me, seems more that she has a chronic delusional disorder.
So now the cop in me is coming out. If you were to believe that she believed truly that people were zombies and she had rid the world of one more zombie, I made a statement a few weeks ago. I believe she would have been standing on a rooftop shouting out, I saved the world from another zombie, not keeping it quiet, keeping it out of reach, hiding it from the police, hiding it from the public, going away and putting on a facade that life is normal and my kids are fine back somewhere else. And this is the thing that always drives me to you might be mentally ill, but you still know what society standards are and you choose to violate the law.
That's anyway. Right. So, and that's where, I see that a super chat came in. That's nice.
Let's. Oh, you know what? Usually I have Skylar pop in because I don't wear my glasses. So I want to just take this. Are the traits between male and female serial killers the same? Actually, there are some interesting differences, and there are far more male serial killers than female serial killers. But we have seen some Eileen Wuornos and others who obviously were serial killers. Tammy may very well be proven to be a serial killer if she's responsible for each of those. But the characteristics are a little different in each of them. Why don't you take this one, Doc?
Okay, but I want to go back to the first gentleman who asked about the traits. I'm not talking about the traits here, but it is a known phenomenon that even though women serial killers are few and far between. Their MO for murder is generally poisoning. And that's very interesting. So I put that in your pipe and smoke it. So your crack pipe. Yeah, you're whatever. You know, put the feather in your cap. I don't know what the expression is, but the bottom line is it behooves us, I think, to look at what are the manners of death, or what do we believe the manners are of death of these many people. And if it involves poisoning or even the possibility, that really does point very much more towards a female serial killer.
That's really interesting. And then, of course, on the male side, especially if you bring in sexual predation into it, then we start seeing more physical hands-on kinds of things to manipulate and cause death versus a gunshot or something else like that. It becomes much more personal to the men in these cases. That's really interesting. So take adopt all the kittens question. Dr. Salerno, would you add personality disorders to Lori, in your opinion?
Okay, so that's what we call sort of, I call the Axis 2 diagnosis, are personality disorders. And in that category, if you have everybody has, by the way, has traits of these disorders. So some common personality disorders would be obsessive compulsive personality disorder. When they become a disorder and you're an Axis 2 and you have a diagnosis, your traits become so enmeshed with and so part of the fabric of who you are and can be crippling in a lot of ways. So I'll just say you can have a histrionic disorder, which is dramatic. I'm very dramatic. I mean, hey, man, I'm Spanish, Italian. My middle name as a kid, my siblings used to call me Amata, which is that way for Amy in Italian. Amata Dramatica Salerno.
I can get.
You got Dramatica. So I definitely have traits of being histrionic. Do I have a histrionic personality disorder? No. And I'm so then you go down to antisocial personality disorder. You have things like, I can't think of all the dependent personality disorder. So let's just look at those for now. Everybody has traits, and it's fun, I think, to say, well, what traits do I have? Because if you aren't able to say as an adult that you have, you're flawed and you have some little traits that may be a little neurotic, then, you know, grow up. I would say, but so I definitely
or ask your children and they can help you realize.
Oh, my kids would be like,
yeah,
mommy dramatica. Uh-huh. So, in Lori's case, you know, and the verbiage of sociopathy and psychopathy are thrown around and sometimes they're interchangeably thrown around and that's inappropriate. But first of all, looking at Lori in terms of her personality, Axis 2, I believe that she is a psychopath. And the way I, as a layperson, this would not be in a professional paper. They'd be like, what are you talking about? But as a layperson example of the difference between psychopathy and sociopathy, the main difference is, first of all, we believe in this day, based on the research, that psychopathy, being a psychopath, is genetic, and that people are actually born psychopaths. Not all, but there's a huge genetic component to psychopathy. And with sociopathy, not so much. But the big difference, if you want to hang your hat on one diagnosis or another, adopt all the kitties, is that with psychopathy, the person is uber charming. They are very good at relationships, albeit superficial, and they're uber charming. Whereas somebody with a sociopathy, they often are more odd and they don't engage people very well. And the kind of stuff they might do would be, you know, embezzling money or things like that, but they're not charming.
So Let me ask you on this vein, and I want to just say, Bo Peep, thank you for that question. I found that in almost all of these, it boils down to power, dominion, or control. So I think you're right on this thinking. What I'm wondering about, Amy, is when we think about Chad, he certainly isn't charismatic and charming, but he certainly maybe is fitting more closely this bucket of sociopathic. Mm-hmm.
Although apparently the women were turned on by him. They were attracted to him somehow, maybe to his calm demeanor. I don't know.
Amy, that in my opinion is that when you get cultic behavior involved and people who are believed to be somewhat in connection directly with God or prophets, a lot of people are whacked out over them that would never otherwise be impressed with them. And I just wonder, because as I listen to him giving speeches and other things, I think, holy cow, what did anybody see in this guy?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I would totally agree with you. Yeah, here we are banding about diagnoses, but I would put him in the sociopathy category. He's not charismatic. He's not charming. He doesn't have a slew of relationships. If you think about it, like he had his family, but whereas Lori was hither, thither, and yon, you know, and dating and having many, many husbands and charming the pants off all of them. And most of them are dead.
Crazy. You know, well, first and foremost, Doc, we got to have you back in a couple of weeks because I can see 12 different pathways we need to go down and talk about. And the more we talk, the more I have questions that I want to explore. But let's talk about Joseph Ryan a little bit. We had Annie, his sister, on. We've looked at that case very closely. We wondered early on, and it was later confirmed that there was money that was transferred into Ty Lee's hands as a result of his death, that Lori would have benefited from that by having control over Ty Lee's money. And we saw that she actually transferred the delivery of that monthly Social Security payment over to her bank account rather than her daughter's. But let's go back, because back then, he's discovered partially decomposed. I mean, I've been on those dead body calls where they've been baking in the sun for a few days, and the body falls apart pretty darn quick. But even though he's been cremated, we talked a year ago, and folks, please go back and watch that video if this is of interest to you. But we talked about the fact that still there were major pieces of tissue that were collected as part of that and what the value is. And especially as we think about malachite poisoning and all these other things that keep coming up, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, he was actually, and I misspoke a year ago, and I said he was moderately decomposed. I think he was profoundly decomposed. Yeah. Because when I read back on some of the autopsy, I mean, he had slippage of his skin, etc. But they did, a year ago, I told you that, in my opinion, they did what we call a cursory autopsy, in the sense that they did not open him up, look inside. They just did a sort of external cursory autopsy for two reasons. Number one, he was profoundly decomposed. Number two, there was no real suspicion at that time about anything. They didn't know the Lori Vallow connection. So thank God that they did get a large piece of deep thigh tissue on him. And, you know, that is not the ideal place to look. The thigh is not the ideal place to look for poisoning or toxicology levels, but they have it. And I don't know if they have proceeded down that road to look further. I will say that something that came up since a year ago that when we spoke on this issue is that the bedroom of Joseph Ryan, to me, in reading about the window that was open, the screen that was displaced and placed on the terrace, I don't know if you knew, were that deep into it. It does not preclude somebody having gained access ingress, egress, and done something to him. What, when the thermometer or thermostat was at 75 degrees and assuming that he had AC, why was his window left like that? Why did, was the window open and the screen removed and placed against the outside terrace? And to me, that adds more possibility for a nefarious death.
You know, when I read that, I thought, if I wanted to stage a scene and make sure that once someone starts decomposing, we know how much they stink, I would want to make sure that house wasn't sealed. I would want that smell to start wafting out from the home.
And they had a, and he had a fan by the window on.
Yeah.
Right. So there, I just don't know. Maybe you know, obviously, much more than I. Is law enforcement looking deeper into this?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Because we saw they came back and said, no, we don't believe there's a homicide there. But the one thing that's kind of cool about law enforcement that I hope in this case remains is that as new information unfolds, they're not so proud as being able to go back and say, let's look at it again. Or now we have malachite, or we found something else in the children, or in Tammy Daybell, because we don't know anything about Tammy Daybell, that there might be something that they can go back and test against, or all of a sudden something that didn't make sense in 2018, all of a sudden 3 years later, it's like the light turns on and you're like, holy cow, how did we miss that? Mm-hmm. And, so you can hope that I can hope that there are really good crime scene photos and other kinds of things, and maybe something will come up out of that. But that really was so enlightening to me when you talked about this deep muscle tissue and the fact that there still is something forensically that could be recovered there.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know. How does one petition? You know, I feel bad for Analytics. I call her that. I feel bad for her because she's done such a deep dive into this, the events surrounding her brother's death. And, you know, it is rather suspect that Lori didn't even barely contact her. It was a long time in coming. I wish she would have the right or the ability to ask them to do a deeper dive into his autopsy and the physical findings around his death. Yeah. Last year, I coined the phrase that there are two types of autopsies. There are forensic autopsies, and then there are medical legal autopsies. And I think in this case, they just sort of did a medical/legal autopsy. Obviously, there was no forensics involved because they didn't suspect anything. But I coined the phrase because I am very psychiatrically and social psychiatric interested. What I call the social autopsy. Okay. To me, as a physician, especially family practice, it is not enough. I mean, an autopsy is interesting and maybe it can be pathognomonic and you can find something, or you can say, I have these three things. This is how the guy died. But it is incumbent, especially in the case of Joseph Ryan, for, in my opinion, investigators should do what I call a social autopsy, to look at all the players in his life, to look at all the court cases that happened with Lori, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the money, you know, the money stream, the streams of revenue, all of that needs to be looked at. And it needs to be looked at with a fine-tooth comb. And that is what I would call a social autopsy. And it is never too late for that. What do you think?
No, absolutely. In criminal justice talk, what we would say is that we're pretty darn good at taking the four forms of evidence, physical and forensic and eyewitness accounts and circumstantial, and but behavioral, not social, we would call it behavioral evidence, becomes so incredibly mm-hmm. important, including things like Lori jokingly talking about wanting to kill her husband in front of a huge group of people, or things like
that
take you back in time and say, whoa, what about this thing here? Folks, I'm talking with Dr. Amy Salerno, and we visited a year ago on this case, and actually talked about Alex Cox and Charles Vallow. And I don't know if we're going to get to all those tonight, but I want to just focus just a second longer on Joseph Ryan, because we talked back then, we couldn't figure out the money trail at that time. It took us several months until that became public, that there was Social Security money going. I wanted to just throw one devil's advocate thing out in regard to the Ryan case, and that is the fan at the window. It's not uncommon at all, if your air conditioning is not working at the optimum level, to put a fan to exhaust the air and try to draw more air into a bedroom that doesn't get real good air conditioning or something else. So it's kind of like that psychology diagnosis you gave. We can't give a crime scene diagnosis without really understanding what is the physics of what's going on in that home, because there might be a perfect explanation for that fan there. Or it could be, like I theorized as one wacky idea, that it's a way I'm going to make sure people can smell this body decomposing.
Can or cannot smell?
No, that you could smell it outside. Yeah, you would want, after a period of time, for that person to be discovered long after, if you had something to do with it, that you were gone. I mean, it's the perfect thing. We saw this in the BTK killings in Wichita, if you remember that. There were times when in one particular case, there were ice cubes sitting on the counter in a house, and police spent weeks trying to figure out, based on how far the ice cubes had melted, when the suspect must have left the house, based on getting some ice cubes out or the victim getting them out and then being assaulted. Well, it ended up at the end of the day, and Kenny Landwehr, the detective who handled that, was a good friend. We talked the case for years and years together. He said what it boiled down to was a deputy chief came in, and it was a hot day, and he actually made himself a glass of ice water and left it there and completely screwed up a crime scene. So you never know what's going to happen in some of these cases.
But just to back at you for the devil's advocate, devil's advocate you to the second power, is that in reading the crime scene summary, the thermostat was at 74 degrees. So, I mean, I don't know what people usually, I leave mine at 70, you know, at the most, the air conditioning, because we want to save money. But 74 is not that bad, especially if you have the window wide open.
Yeah.
And a fan going. So I think probably the air conditioning.
74 degrees when it's 110 degrees outside, like Phoenix can get.
Yeah.
Maybe is just the same as what you and I said ours at. I don't know. Right. I don't think it's fun to just kind of argue and debate back and forth some of these wacky things. And this is what I hope law enforcement is doing over and again. Folks, please ask your questions. The back office is going to be watching. We'll answer. And Amy, if we run out of time, I hope you'll come back, because I see the clock just spinning like a blade on that pen you were talking about. And folks, whether we like it or not, the super chats rise right to the top. So keep that in mind as you go through that. Well, I want to just kind of skip over Charles Vallow pretty quickly, because that was a flat out homicide. By the definition, it was a homicide because his life was taken. And I think it became very clear as more unfolded that there may have been a planned homicide by Alex in that case. And I want to just jump right to Alexander and then kind of end with Tammy. And then maybe we could come back and talk about the kids another time. But I wanted that one question is kind of a teaser on Tammy, and then we'll come back and talk about that more deeply. But you and I had a lot of questions about Alexander Cox and how a guy that goes through all the things that he did. And I want to just name this off to kind of set the stage. Joseph Ryan dies in 2018. Then Charles Vallow dies in 2019, July 11th. Then we lose Tammy Daybell within 10 days of Tylee. And then J.J. Vallow within a few days of Tammy. And then as soon as all of that gets done, Alex hurries and marries, changes his name, and then dies in his home. And that thing bugged you from the moment you saw it. Tell me about that one.
Well, I mean, it bugged me because I'm not to disrespect you, but you may have some of the dates a little bit wrong. Probably. Yeah. So, but basically, Ty Lee and JJ were probably sometime in September, and Tammy was, you know,
November.
November.
Yeah, so, you're right.
That's all right. I mean, I just wanted to clarify that, but it bothered me for many reasons. Number one, I do know that the autopsy, and it was a very complete, for the most part, autopsy, did show that his left anterior descending artery, which is the main artery that feeds your heart, was almost 100% occluded. People do die of that. And he had 50% occlusion elsewhere. But what bothers me is that, I mean, the guy was on no medication. And only after the fact did Sulema say that he was symptomatic and having some maybe chest pain and some shortness of breath, but a few days prior to his death. But this is a guy who basically was traveling hither, thither, yon. And yes, they claim that he had clots in his lungs, probably from maybe a deep venous thrombosis or maybe from the heart. But what bothered me about the autopsy is they really didn't comment too much on the deep veins of the extremity. So where did the clots come from? And then I ran with you on the whole malachite thing, and that malachite can alter. I mean, it takes a small amount. Like if you, it takes a small amount, I won't tell you too much about that, but there was a three-year-old that ingested that green fish
food dye. I mean, fish food.
I don't know if it's the food or the aquatic.
Yeah, I remember that.
Disinfected, yeah. Or whatever. And she, it was a small amount, and within minutes, her parent found her completely blue, not breathing. They rushed her down to the hospital. She survived, but they said, the brother said, oh, she was eating this thing. And what this thing was, the aquatic preparation to clean the tank. And it comes in a very small little bottle. Malachite was the main thing. So it is very organically active. It binds to copper, and you can have effects either immediately. You can also have effects over a period of weeks, or you can have an effect long-term. If you were working as a jeweler, you know, with malachite, what is my point? My point is that the circumstances around his death make no sense to me. The foaming at the mouth, the fact that he did have bowel incontinence, but that it was really diarrhea more than just, because people do die on the commode when they strain. Older people like me, if you strain, you can have a vasovagal episode and you can faint, and it can also cause your heart to stop. Okay. So that's why so many older people are found on the bathroom floor. But his presentation of being on the bathroom floor doesn't smack of the typical vasovagal / sudden cardiac death.
You know, we're going to kind of jump a little bit because Mandy has a great question here that really hits your swim lane. How do you tell when somebody's playing games through this process of restoring competency?
I think it's extremely difficult. First of all, if she is not, many people can be incompetent in a moment of time to stand trial. They may have a nervous breakdown, whatever. She can't stand trial right now. She's hysterical. She's depressed, whatever. That is a reparable phenomenon. That doesn't mean that they were criminally insane at the time of the murders. And that does not mean she's not culpable or potentially culpable for the actions that occurred when she was not incompetent. So it bothers me that she's playing the incompetent card. But I think that the prosecution has to allow for that, because they don't want to have a mistrial by saying you forced her when she was deemed incompetent to stand trial. A lot of people do play that card. And my question, and you might be able to answer this, Mike, is I believe that no psychiatrist evaluated her competency. It was a psychologist.
Correct. Yeah. And so now we're seeing a lot of maneuvering going on. Of course, we saw the latest Mark Means, her attorney on the defense side, argued, hey, we want to know everything that's happening. We're troubled because the prosecution talked to the mental hospital. Yeah, you're going to have to get over that because that's got to happen. This person is not working for the state or for the prosecution. Their job is to get Tammy so that she can stand, or Lori, so that she can stand trial. And I'm with you. I mean, I think there's enough evidence to support that she was okay. I'll buy mental illness. I don't have a problem with that. But she knew what she was doing in this thing. There was culpability and responsibility. And now she's just saying, I can't participate in my defense. And that's the whole thing that's going on now. Thankfully, Idaho there's no insanity defense in Idaho. So a little different than Colorado in the Morphew case that we're looking at, where there is an insanity defense, but there isn't one in Idaho. So at some point, she's going to have to face the Piper. But the question is, remember, President Reagan and Jim Baker and Robert Hinckley, yep, was sitting in a mental hospital. So some people can ride that wave a long time.
Well, I don't believe that she will be able to. And yeah, I would urge, if they're listening, the powers that be are listening, it would be very important to also have a psychiatrist, because a psychiatrist is a medical doctor, an MD. And they really have the ability to look at, you know, acute decompensation psychiatrically, incompetence, insanity, etc. I don't know why they wouldn't also have a psychiatrist evaluate her. And if I were the prosecuting side, I would demand that.
I think you can plan on the fact that that will happen in the state mental hospital, especially since they have 90 days before they review, and then the clock doubles to 180. So they want to try to get her competent as quickly as they can. And so I think we're going to see psychiatrists working on this, not the court-appointed psychologist originally.
I hope that answered the question of the gal that asked the question. I was that what she asked the chat gal on live just now?
Now I got to go back. Hope I wasn't just saying what I wanted to say. But yes, I think that was it had to do with the process of, are they going to be able to get her competent again? And I don't know that it's really a process of getting her competent again, is it? It's more a process of understanding if she's competent, and then putting her on a plan to get her medication or other things. If she refuses to take medication, that's going to be interesting.
That's where you have injectables. But anyway, whatever. But no, I think that I do not despair. I don't remember the name of the woman that did the super chat just now, but I would like to send her a message. Do not despair. She may be playing the incompetent card, but be patient.
Yeah. Well, there is absolutely no question that we're going to have to come back, because I want to spend a little time. Really, we're going to be talking about the medicological side of three people that we don't have a lot of information on. I mean, we don't have autopsy reports on the children. We don't have one on Tammy. But I think we can talk theoretically and talk through kind of some of the challenges that they're facing. I think one of the questions I'd like is just to jump back with maybe Alex or even Joseph, if it applies, and that is, what do you think was the source of blood clots in the lungs? And did Joseph have blood clots, or did they just say it was?
They did cursory external look, and they based their natural findings on the fact that he was on lipid medication. He was on an antidepressant, and I believe he may have been on an hypertensive, but they based it on natural given his medical history. Okay. They did not look. And as far as Alex, that's what it bothers me. I have to look again at more deeply at the autopsy, because there is no comment as to, number one, where the ME, the medical examiner, believe these clots traveled from, because an embolus means it has to come from somewhere. An embolus doesn't, you can develop lung. Yes, you can develop clots in your lungs, but is this ME opining that this was an embolus or this was developed in his lungs? And if it's an embolus, where did it come from? He didn't answer that question well enough.
So that was my question, Amy, is were these new clots or old clots? Because an old clot would be like, I've been sitting in the airplane too long or something, wouldn't it?
Well, a lot of people throw clot. A lot of people do present with a culmination after many weeks of throwing little clots from a chronic deep venous thrombosis. Maybe they took the airplane, or he went to Mexico as a truck driver to get some medications, which apparently he is on no medication. I mean, this whole story is very suspect. But let's say he developed a clot as a truck driver, or when he went to Mexico to get his alleged medications. Maybe, but that was 2 weeks. Those clot, he may have flicked off clot here, clot there, clot here, clot there. And those would be, when they opened up the lungs, an old, you know, mature clots. We don't know. That wasn't commented on either. So we need more information.
Yeah. Oh, if law enforcement would just give us in the public side all the info we wanted. Okay.
But Malachi poisoning, on that, we can visit this on our next go round if you choose to invite me. But Malachi poisoning is known to cause microbleeding in the lungs, and it does interfere with the clotting cascade. Okay. So that you get the bleeding, but then you can get a hyperclotting. So he could have been malachite poisoned and developed these clots in his lungs. You see, so we need more time and more information.
I don't even know that you pitched this the way I caught it, but when you even were talking about the child getting the malachite from the aquarium, and you mentioned the jeweler, and I want to tie together how intriguing it was that Lori ordered malachite rings for their special wedding in Hawaii, and that jeweler is what reminded me that's another area that would be fun to talk about, because you do see serial killers who at times will take trophies. Sometimes they're symbolic, the memory, the location. Sometimes they're an actual artifact, and I found that very interesting as well as we look at that. I want to just have the back office, if there's anything that is pressing, pop up that information. I think we got to get you back in the next.
But I would like to issue a challenge.
Okay.
Might I?
Please.
Well, there are two instances, and I cannot honestly find or remember the second instance, where Chad invoked, quote, a blessing. One was on Alex from Hawaii, and he died. And I feel like, but this, maybe your subs and members could kind of dig into this. There was another instance where Chad, I believe Melanie Gibb mentioned that Chad gave a blessing, and the person died. So my question is for all of us, myself included, is his giving a blessing code for something?
Yeah, really.
What do you think?
Well, you know, number one, as I have come to know a lot about blessings in Christian faith, that certainly would not be weird for someone who is a believer and someone who's professing they're a prophet to try to give blessings and do that. But this angle is really intriguing, because is it really the check mark that someone else needs. I would suspect that that group, Alex, Lori, Chad, they probably didn't need a checkbox other than it might have been very demonstrative in a way to say, look how caring I am and how much I want to help this person.
That could be, but I feel like it could also be represent a code word.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know. Dream of Hive, of a hive.
Oh.
Do we know what the gift basket Zalema gave Alex to make up was?
Weird. To me, Miss Dream of Hive.
Dream of a hive.
Oh, dream of a hive. Okay, got it. I'm sorry, I was doing Spanish. Dreamo. Okay. That was weird that Zalema, and I'm going to go back and look more at her interviews. She mentions that it was very important, Miss Dream of a Hive, for him to make this gift basket. What the heck was in this gift basket? Yes. And whom was it for? And why was it so important?
Yeah. So the next 2 to 3 weeks, let's look at your calendar and see if we can get you back there. Nanny Mo is asking, is malachite poisoning traceable in the autopsy? How long will it linger or disappear?
Okay. Miss Nanny Mo, malachite binds to copper and it's very sort of organically, it's organically active. So it really dissipates quite quickly. That's the thing. So it would be, in my opinion, from what I've read and what I know about malachite, rather difficult for them to trace that. But next time, I do think we should talk more about, was there malachite poisoning? Because he had a lot of the symptoms, not of the vasovagal, I'm trying to have a poop strain fall out on the bathroom floor. But to me, he had some of the stigmata of malachite poisoning in his diarrhea, many different things, which we don't have time to do today, but we will certainly, I would love to come back and we can talk about that more.
Yeah, that would be really good. And to talk about how that would show in the toxicology report. Meflower 66 is saying the interesting thing is the timetable, and boy, right on. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how once all the dirty work was done and then he became a liability that he disappeared. So thank you, Me Flowers. That is true. You know, this thing, you keep thinking, how can we keep talking about it? But it just keeps getting another thread that you pull and you go crazy over. Dr. Amy Salerno, I just can't thank you enough. Not only are you a dear friend, but you are amazing to listen to. And now I can bring all my psycho problems to you too. So this is awesome.
I just hope that I didn't say, like I did the very first time I was a guest and I was so nervous.
This is awesome. You can tell from what people are saying. They just absolutely love having you. Please give your girls a hug for us. Again, I can't thank you enough. The final word, anything you want to pass on before we get you back?
Something resonated deeply with me from Mike, which is that he believes strongly in what you call crowdsourcing for, you know, looking into some of these unsolved mystery crimes. And I think there's a lot of talk on different channels like that. It's just, there's no use to have people talking like we're talking. But I believe firmly that it not only is helpful to understand these different cases, but that you folks, like the subs, the members, etc., are, you know, crucial in offering information and finding information. And I think it's fabulous what you are doing, Mike. And, you know, a year ago, practically today, I tuned in. It was your first thing with Chris. And I think you had like 2 subs and 3 views or something. And I think that you have shown, you know, the world really that folks like us, I'm a sub and a member, do matter in understanding crime.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doc. And I'll tell you, shout out to all of these amazing subs. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. We broke the 70,000 mark yesterday. A great, fun Father's Day present as well. But from all of us at Profiling Evil, thanks, everyone. Have a good night. Thanks, Doc.
Bye.
Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is TruthFinder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give TruthFinder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing. But you gotta click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time.